And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America, and welcome to the Inside Scoop. Today, April 29th, 2009, is officially the 100th day of the Obama presidency. And, of course, all the media is out there making mincemeat of this arbitrary day. But you know what? It does give us a chance to see how the President of the United States has done out of the gate on this 100th day, 99 days and some 5 hours ago. Barack Obama was inaugurated as President of the United States. And I think it's fair to say, well, how's he started? How's his presidency began? Later on in this broadcast, I'm going to bring a member of Congress on the air to give his perspective, Russ Carnahan, a Democrat of Missouri, and we'll get to him later in the broadcast. But as I was writing down all the different things that I think Barack Obama will be remembered for in his first 100 days, the first thing that came to my mind was the economy and how it is he'll be remembered. Will he save the banks? Will he save the financial institutions that have led to the crisis and the criticism for that? Everything from the AIG bonuses to the troubled asset recovery program to the new public-private investment partnership. This is all acronym land, from AIG to TARP to PPIP. This is something that I think he'll be remembered for good or for ill, depending on not whether he saves the banking system. It's largely due to President Obama that we have the lowest interest rates in a generation, that we have a mortgage recovery plan for homeowners, that we have the largest stimulus package ever passed in modern times, really the largest in our history, but even as a percentage of our gross domestic product, one of the largest ever. Will it stimulate the economy? Will it succeed? Or will it simply burden future generations into debt? This is a question that has yet to be answered. But I think that the success of the Obama administration will largely be measured on his economic agenda. Will he save the auto companies? Will he save anything worthy of the American auto industry? And will it be seen in the future as something that he simply inherited from George Bush? Or will President Obama be blamed? Right now, I think the American people see it as President Obama doing the best he can. In fact, on January 20th, a mere 17% of Americans thought this country was on the right track. It's now up to 50%. That's pretty good, a rise of 33 points in 100 days. But he's also been tested on the foreign front, everything from showing a real diplomatic White House. This is a White House that is showing that diplomacy is the hallmark of its administration. And both in President Obama's trips to Europe and to Latin America, he has shown someone who can reach out both to our friends and even to our enemies. He was criticized for shaking hands with Hugo Chavez, for reaching out to countries like Iran. And sometimes he was slapped. He was slapped, certainly, by Iran. Chavez handed him a book on American imperialism, and in some ways he was slapped much more seriously. North Korea shooting a missile over Japan. Somalia's government having really no power at all, and so pirates off the coast attacking an American ship. I think these first 100 days will be remembered for President Obama's response to those pirates as much as anything else. There's the ongoing wars. Of course, Obama in his first week announced that the withdrawal of all combat troops from Iraq in August 2010. We'll see if he goes through with that and whether it's a meaningful withdrawal and not just a semantic withdrawal. He's increased American troops into Afghanistan. We'll see how we prevail on that front. And the largest and most important front in a fight against really very deadly enemies is in a country that gets far too little mention, I think, in the press, in Pakistan. The Taliban is increasingly winning over that country. They're increasing territory. They're approaching the capital, Islamabad. Pakistan, I don't think I need to repeat here, has nuclear weapons. And if you think Al-Qaeda and the Taliban are dangerous, they're nothing compared to the scary nature of a Taliban-controlled Pakistan. That, I think, is the real problem around the corner. Also around the corner domestically, there's Barack Obama's health care policy. I think that's going to come up very soon and not long after his energy policy. to have a more green agenda to get us off of some of the fossil fuels that cause global warming, to promote the economy in that way through a cap-and-trade system. These are the battles that are just around the corner. But I think President Obama will be as much remembered in his first 100 days for the spirit of the way he conducts his administration as much as the specifics of the policy. This is no drama Obama. This is a very calm, cool guy who I think is getting pretty good at instilling confidence. Confidence that this is a competent guy, that he knows what he's doing, that Hurricane Katrina won't happen on his watch. Even if you look at perhaps the most incompetent decision so far of this administration, whether it's the cabinet post, we'll get to that in a minute. I was thinking more of the plane over New York City, the photo op, a terrible thing, frankly, reminds you of Katrina, and they're looking at firing the guy that ordered the photo op. Direct accountability, a real change from the Bush administration. A transparent government. This is a government that's putting everything up on the website, that's letting people know exactly what's in the bills that they're passing. Some would say President Obama is overexposed because he's constantly going out in town hall meetings across the nation to explain his policies, going on television to explain as much as he can. Even the release of the torture memos are largely an example of transparency, letting people know what the government has done, even though I think that President Obama will be criticized when very few people are prosecuted for those torture memos. In the cabinet, I think he's got some strong leadership. I think Rahm Emanuel has done an amazing job as chief of staff, juggling all of these balls in the air at one time. I think Hillary Clinton is starting a bang-up job as Secretary of State. There were some mistakes in the cabinet. We know, of course, the problems with Tom Daschle, with Bill Richardson, with Judd Gregg. These are the failed nominations. But now he has a cabinet in place. And with Kathleen Sebelius being the last person there, just approved as Health and Human Services Secretary, this is a cabinet that's filled of very smart people, of very strong personalities. He has managed to put in a cabinet of rivals, as he talked about, as Abraham Lincoln has done. And perhaps one of the things that I think best typifies President Obama in his first 100 days was the debate over the release of the torture memos. President Obama was undecided as to what to do, so he split up his cabinet. He split up his advisors, and he said to the people who most strongly wanted those memos released to make their case, and the people who most strongly did not want the memos released to make their case, both groups of intelligent advisors making their strongest case, President Obama listened to both sides and decided to release the memos. This is the way this president works. For the opposition, the Republicans, I think they are in complete disarray. And it's largely due to President Obama's effectiveness. The Republican Party has become the party of just say no, a party with no ideas of its own other than to disrupt Obama. And I think the president, and really more Rahm Emanuel, has very much emphasized the fecklessness of the Republicans, the fact that they really have no agenda, by pointing out their real leadership, Rush Limbaugh. Their leadership is entirely about hot air. It's about shouting. It's about insulting. It's not about a planned agenda. It is only about just say no. He reached out to the Republicans in a spirit of bipartisanship, and they, like so much of our enemies, slapped his hand. So I think the public understands. Obama tried to be bipartisan. The Republicans rejected the invitation. And now you have people like Alan Spector switching parties. Sure, Spector did it for his own reasons. We'll talk a little bit later on about Spector and his motivations. But the point is that now they can have 60 votes without Republicans. Whether Spector's reliable or not, who knows? But the symbolism of the switch is very important, even if we can't necessarily trust Arlen Specter. The symbolism of saying that there are 60 votes, that the agenda can move on without opposition to a party that just says no. I'm told my guest is now on the line, Russ Carnahan. He's a Democratic congressman from Missouri. Congressman Carnahan, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Congressman, are you there?
Hello?
There you are. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Good, good. I was talking about the first 100 days of the Obama administration, and I'm curious to know what you think will be remembered in history as the most important part of the beginnings of the Obama administration.
You know, I think I could go down a laundry list of early accomplishments, but I think the big picture takeaways from these first 100 days are that he had these multiple challenges land on his lap, and he's had such a steady hand, help restore the economic confidence of the American people and reconnect them to their government to make them feel like they were part of it. And he's rebuilt our image around the world in a few short months. So I think those are the big items that have happened in just these first few months of his presidency.
Do you think that President Obama will largely be judged by how well the economy turns around in the next year?
No question. The economy is going to be central to his success. He's made that the primary focus of just about everything we do, from building roads to transforming our healthcare system. And but a big part of that is restoring confidence. At some point, we're going to have a floor built under this economy. It's going to begin to bounce back. And there are going to be goodbyes in things like real estate, automobiles, the stock market, and people are going to begin to have that confidence and begin to get the economy going again.
Of course, part of the fear is that that they will be goodbye BYE rather than goodbye BUYS. A number of people think that President Obama won't be able to save the auto industry, for example. Do you think there needs to be some leaner and meaner, if you will, whether it's banks or auto companies or other American industries? Are there going to be a lot of jobs lost before this is all over?
I think it's almost certain that there will be more job losses, and the president's been very candid about that. But in terms of the auto industry in particular, he's also been very committed to that, that the industry will need to downsize, to retool, but they're in this double race. They have to make this giant leap of technology to build the cars of the future today, and they have to do it at a time when the demand for cars is very low. So one of the creative things the President's Auto Task Force has done is really they've been hard negotiators. They've had concessions from the auto companies, from the lenders, from the labor unions across the board, to downsize the companies to where they're survivable. They can write off some of this debt that's weighed them down. And I think if they will make these technology transitions, that they can survive.
Let me ask you about Wall Street. It's a very, very difficult political animal for the President of the United States. Here he's in the middle of a crisis that he did not cause, caused by policies of past administrations. And Wall Street seems to have led our economy into the ditch, and yet without lending, we can't get out of this ditch. So you end up with President Obama and the Congress supporting and giving money to many of the same institutions that led us down this awful road. And it's a very, very difficult political thing to do, and there's certainly demagogues and people in the Republican Party who are quick to talk about that. How well has President Obama made the case that we need to bail out or in some way improve credit for Wall Street, even though they got us into this mess?
I think the president has been very forceful and very direct with the American people to make that case that we may not like some of these practices. We can't undo some of the things that were done under the Bush administration, but that we have to hold them more accountable to gain that confidence back of the American people. But he has very skillfully, I think, made the case that we have to have, our financial institutions in order. Most of those have been the larger national banks and not the smaller community banks and credit unions. So we have to have that back. And I think families recognize that, businesses recognize that. We can't just beat down Wall Street just because it feels good. We have to really help the whole financial industry succeed.
The Republican Party has become the party of just say no. they certainly don't seem to be offering much in alternative plans. But their biggest argument, and one that I think has resonance still, one of the few arguments, frankly, that they still make that has resonance, is the idea that all of this is very, very expensive, from the stimulus package to TARP to all of President Obama's plans, energy and health care. It's running up the deficit very, very high. Do you think that this may be a time bomb for the Obama administration, that over time will come to really harm both President Obama's agenda and the way people view his administration?
Well, you know, the president talked about this today when he did the town hall meeting back in Missouri in my district, and talked about the fact that, indeed, the debt is a concern in the long term, but that he has inherited the most part of the debt from the Bush administration, and that there's very strong agreement among economists, from Republicans to Democrats and everybody in between, that we need to do major spending and investments that were done, along with the tax cuts for 95% of Americans, that's the formula to bring us out of this ditch. But then over time, by getting PAYGO rules reinstituted, that we will follow the model similar to the 1990s, when the Clinton administration paid down the debt year by year until it was done. And that's what the budget we passed today in the House will do. It has us on a glide path to get that paid down by two-thirds by 2013.
But I wonder, you know, here's at a time when President Obama, as you say, has reduced the tax burden on 95% of Americans. And yet, perception sometimes becomes reality in politics. Right when he's doing this, you know, Fox News calls out these tea parties around the country, and people protest higher taxes at a time when their taxes are being lowered. Are we losing some of the message here?
You know, certainly those tea parties got some publicity. You know, they were a cute publicity stunt, but I think virtually all the people that showed up at those tea parties were of those 95% of Americans that got the tax cut. So I think we have a strong message of really providing tax relief for middle America, that will resonate. And I think there really is a very small minority that are in the camp that, you know, really would have any traction against this president.
But I mean, how do you handle that politically? I mean, I think you fairly point out that it's really ignorance, that people who were protesting higher taxes are actually getting lower taxes. They were being misinformed. How can Congress, how can the Obama administration, how can liberal radio hosts, those people, the Tea Parties, probably don't listen to folks like me, but how can we get out the message that people, you're just being misinformed? Or do you think they'll just learn it when they see their tax bill?
Well, I think, you know, certainly disinformation is not new to politics. That will continue. But it just means we have to be on our game. We have to be on our message and continue to hit that drumbeat that, you know, the president, he promised this during the campaign, and he delivered it in just a few short months. And I think, you know, we've seen this, you know, when 81% of the people like President Obama, and you know he's got very strong approval ratings in the 60s. This is really unprecedented, particularly in the midst of this economic crisis. So I think he has, by the way he's operated with confidence, and these town hall meetings like the one he had back in Missouri today, really are reconnecting people to their government. That they feel like the president and the Congress are working for them to really solve these big issues of the day. And, you know, if he can keep the support of the American people, he really can transform this country.
Congressman, your state, Missouri, is a very interesting state in many ways. I think it's a microcosm of the United States. It's right smack in the middle of the country. It had one of the closest elections, although it went to John McCain. It went by a mere squeaker. How are people in your district feeling about not just President Obama, but about the Democrats in Congress? Is there, you know, this is a, as I said, a state that slightly went to McCain. Do you think there's more support for President the Democrats now, or do you think there's less support after the first 100 days?
Well, I think the president, similar to around the country, I think his support in Missouri has actually gone up since the elections last November, because he has reached out Democrats, but independents and Republicans, for reform, and he's gotten support from those groups. You know, Missouri is very particular in their voting, and we have a long history of being a bellwether state, a swing state, and he visited Jefferson County, Missouri, which is one of the swing counties in the country in a swing state. So he really has focused on Missouri. I think they were certainly, I was, and I think a lot of folks were disappointed the president didn't win it. He lost it by only 3,000 votes. But they never gave up on Missouri, and I think he's going to continue to work there. The vice president was there the week before for a couple of days. Our senator, Senator McCaskill, has been a great advocate working with this administration, and I think we're going to make inroads in Missouri.
Congressman, how do you take the recent change of party of Senator Arlen Specter? Do you think this is a symbol of larger things, or simply Senator Specter trying to avoid losing a political race?
You know, maybe some of all those things, but ultimately, the Republican Party in the Congress is really far behind the American people and has really lost a connection with the American people. And to the extent that they have actually gone after moderates in their party, and they're really not very welcome in their party. So they really are kind of isolated from the American people in that regard. And so I think it really was a result of them not having a more welcoming attitude for diverse opinions and being really controlled by the more far-right forces in the party. And you have elected officials like Senator Specter that really felt like they didn't have much of a party home anymore. And you add on to that his own political situation in Pennsylvania, which certainly was part of what was driving this. I think it just opened a door for him that made sense. And I think it will also help with the Senate, which was a potential logjam for a lot of big legislation that could be coming through this Congress.
But do you think he'll change his vote in addition to his party? I mean, do you think he'll give the Democrats the 60 votes they need to break Republican filibusters, or is this all mostly a cosmetic change?
I think he will continue to be very independent, but what was really shaping up for him running as a Republican, being challenged from the right, he would have been forced to, had a lot of political pressure, to vote more conservative. In these times, and this really frees him from that pressure to continue to be an independent voice for Pennsylvania. I think he will continue that, but I think it'll certainly be easier for him to do things to support the president and some of these reforms that are so desperately needed.
Congressman, as the Republican Party diminishes, gets smaller, and as the middle of the road, as independents and moderates move more toward the Democratic Party, of course, it makes the Democratic coalition, the big tent, larger, and that means there can be more intra-party squabbles between liberals and blue dogs and, well, the different parts of the Democratic agenda.
That's what makes the Democratic Party such a fun place to be.
Well, you know, we all know what Will Rogers said, right? I'm not a member of any organized party. I'm a Democrat. I'm curious to know behind the scenes, and I don't expect you to name names, but how is that going? Are there a lot of intra-party squabbles among Democrats, or are Democrats in Congress being pretty well disciplined, working out their differences, and coming together with a united message?
I think the Democrats in Congress have been very united. In fact, there were some surveys done in the last Congress, I think that the Democrats in Congress voted more together in a more unified fashion than they had in decades. So I think there's real unity, and then frankly there's a lot of very skilled leadership that has been involved and brinksmanship involved in bringing people together on tough issues, because we know if we were divided, we were not going to be as effective. So there's been a lot of behind-the-scenes work to bring the many diverse parts of our party together, and I think that's been reflected in the unity in party voting. And frankly, the relatively small number of defections that we've had on major votes.
There's two big policies that are just around the corner. One, of course, is a reworking of the entire American healthcare system. There's been a lot of victims on the road. Harry Truman did not succeed. Hillary Clinton did not succeed. That's one very big thing. And the other very big thing, of course, is energy, with a cap-and-trade system to really take a step against global warming. President Obama and the Democrats are trying to do things that have never been done before. They've been tried before, but never successfully done before. Do you think there is likelihood in the next 100 days that we will see major energy and health care reform?
I think this year we will see that. And I just want to say, Mark, I think the dynamic has changed dramatically in health care from the 90s when Hillary Clinton led that charge, and certainly since Harry Truman led that charge. But you see even a lot of people that were, a lot of the corporate community that were highly opposed and active against the health care reforms in the 90s have come on board because they have finally seen this as a business competitiveness issue in terms of competing in a global economy. And this has become such a cost bite from businesses large and small, from families, and people, I think, see this as a major issue. And I think so it's really ripe for people to come together to do some major reforms. And they have this historic alignment in the Congress where we've got the president who is not going to be derailed from this. Some people have pushed back and said, oh, you're trying to do too much. You know, you need to put health care off. And he has said, no. This is absolutely intertwined with our economic success. And you have a new Congress that many of the new members that were elected in the last two cycles, in 06 and 08, got elected running on a platform of health care reform. So I think this is really going to put this on the front burner again and give us a chance to compete in a big way when in past years we've just been nibbling around the edges. So I'm very optimistic about health care.
How about energy? How about the cap and trade? Do you think that's going to happen?
Again, I think the dynamic is really changed, and we have to have a system where we can really have a disincentive for old-fashioned, polluting the dirty energy and incentivizing what we're doing with renewable energy. I think there's, many new members ran on this. The president has made it a high priority, and people get it. You know, they've seen what we've gone through with the last round of gas prices. They get the fact that we've been far too dependent on foreign countries that don't like us and have gotten us into a lot of disputes and wars we probably shouldn't have been involved in. I think people really, at a fundamental level, get that, and there's a new belief, as we've gotten rid of the oil men that ran the White House for two terms, that really looking at this afresh in terms of, you know, we have some of the best scientists and engineers and innovators in the world right here at home. And, you know, we can do this. We can absolutely transform how we power our buildings, our cars, and produce our energy. And, you know, we have this historic alignment and opportunity and really obligation to do that.
I have one last question. It's on foreign policy. I think President Obama has focused largely on domestic policy. I think that's where most of Americans' heads are at these days. But North Korea has shot a missile off. And the thing that most concerns me, frankly, more than anything else, more than Iran getting nuclear weapons, is the Taliban seems to be advancing in Pakistan, a nuclear-armed nation. How much do you fear that, particularly in Pakistan, but anywhere else around the globe, Iran, Afghanistan, Iraq, that foreign policy events will derail a lot of the president's domestic agenda? They'll have to respond to some awful event, and that may throw everything on the track.
Well, I think the president has smartly turned around the image of the U.S. around the world in this amazingly short time by really standing up for American values that are really revered virtually everywhere around the world, by banning torture, by closing Guantanamo Bay, really sent a message that we're going to get back to our values. And his engagement with other leaders, and in particular the Arab world and moderate Arab countries that are very motivated and want to work with us, you know, to solve the problem of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict that want to stop a nuclear Iran and don't want to see Afghanistan and Pakistan really degenerate. So I think there's this large reservoir of goodwill that has been created that's going to help us with our alliances, that's going to help us with the use of our smart power in the diplomatic area. And we know there aren't military solutions for all this. We've got to work together with other countries. We've got to do it smartly. And I think the president's approach has really transformed the way we're able to do that around the world.
Carson Carnahan, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you've got some votes today that you have to attend to, but I very much appreciate you taking the time to be with us here on The Inside Scoop. Thank you again.
I appreciate being with you, Mark, and thanks for what you're doing. Take care.
Folks, if you want to comment on anything that Congressman Carnahan said, or what are your thoughts on President Obama and his first 100 days, give a call, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. What do you think will most be remembered in history? What do you think is the most important thing that he's done that will really judge his presidency in years to come? 877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be right back after this.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Before you fall over backwards cheering Arlen Specter, it's worth remembering how craven he was back in 2006 during the debate on the Military Commissions Act. Specter, who fancies himself a constitutional scholar and protector, recognized that the act would deny people their fundamental right of habeas corpus, which goes all the way back to the Magna Carta. During the debate, he introduced an amendment to preserve habeas corpus. Otherwise, he said, the bill will turn the clocks back 800 years. Specter's amendment failed, and he then turned around and voted for the Military Commissions Act anyway. A true profile in cowardice. The time to switch parties was right before he threw his conscience overboard and voted for the Military Commissions Act. That would have showed real courage. And there's a big difference between that and opportunism, which motivated Specter's decision then and now. So let's see whether Specter will introduce a bill to repeal the Military Commissions Act and whether Obama will throw his weight behind it. Because when it comes to our habeas corpus rights, the clock still says we're in the 13th century. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
We'll be right back.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Congressman Carnahan. I know I did. When I was writing down all the things I could think of for President Obama's first 100 days, I ran out of space. There's so many different things. I've tried to talk about most of them, everything from the stimulus package to the financial services, whether it's TARP or AIG or PPIP, everything, diplomacy in Europe and Venezuela to ending our policy in Cuba to what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan and Iran and Pakistan and North Korea and Somalia, to his releasing the torture memos, to his proposals on energy and healthcare. It's a lot of stuff. But it's fascinating for me because a lot of what he's done to give America confidence has nothing to do with his policy agenda. They like to see a president at work. Americans want to see a president that's competent. But I think the way that President Obama most reminds Americans of President Kennedy is some of the little things. It's having two young children in the White House. It's getting Americans excited about a puppy. It's Michelle Obama's grace, both abroad and at home, planting a garden, taking a press conference from children, which I think was a masterful step, and Sasha and Malia charming the country. This is a president that is charming. And again, I don't think we've had a charming president as charming as he since John F. Kennedy. Maybe Bill Clinton, to some extent, but he didn't have the charming family. Sorry, Hillary and Chelsea. But it's just they just weren't as cute as the two little kids and the dog. And you might say that's all fluff. You might say that's all unimportant. And yet, I actually think it matters. It matters not because the puppy, which puppy he chooses matters, but because it gives Americans a sense of confidence again. A sense of a country looking forward, not looking back. A sense of the dark days of the Bush administration are over. That we have a president whose hands are firmly on the reins of power. He's making difficult decisions. We may not agree with all those decisions. I certainly don't agree with all the decisions. But his heart's in the right place. His mind's in the right place. His family's in the right place. There's something just, I don't know, cathartic. It's like a cleansing. And maybe the puppy dog is part of it. It's not just that we finally have a president who's looking out for long simmering questions, questions of health care, questions of energy that have just sort of sat on the back burner for decades, but a president that with his family is showing a new face to America. I mean, so much is said about him being the first African-American president that I don't need to repeat it. Yet just seeing him and his wife and his two kids in the White House, they personify change. Watching the president in Europe and in South America, in Trinidad, in Latin America, showing respect for other nations, it personifies change. I mean, America has traditionally treated even its allies with a bit of disdain. Not just the powerful ones like France and England, but the lesser powerful ones like our allies in Latin America. And yet you found President Obama going and talking very humbly, I guess, about the things America has done wrong, but doing so, in my view, without apologizing for who America is, recognizing that we've made mistakes, but recognizing also that those mistakes do not identify America. They identify mistakes, past administrations, but not the essence of who we are. And so when he shakes hands with a Chavez, when he is kind to people who are unkind to him, whether it's Chavez or Iran or, frankly, the Republican, he's showing he's putting the best face forward. Look at what he did in Cuba, for example. He said that the policy restricts Americans too much. How can we restrict Americans from traveling? This is a free country. And so he's ending the travel restriction. He is very much bringing down the embargo. He's not completely getting rid of things. Now he's saying to Cuba, all right, it's your turn. We've shown good faith. Let's see what we get from you. And I think whatever either of the brothers Castro do, it will be clear to the world that, hey, we tried. We put our good faith forward. And if Cuba doesn't respond, then, well, people will see the Cuban government for what it is. And the same is true in Iran. And the same is true in North Korea. Frankly, the same is true to the Republicans. President Obama reached out to the Republicans. He went to their meetings, not once, not twice, but three times, something that George Bush never did in all of his presidency, and Barack Obama did three times in his first month in office. And the Republicans, every single one of them in the House, turned him down. In the Senate, the only people to support him were the three moderates, one of whom is now a Democrat, Harlan Specter, and, of course, the two Republican senators from Maine. That's it. The Republicans have been and are the Just Say No party. And yet I think the Obama administration very skillfully made that clear to the rest of the country. Rahm Emanuel, I think, did an amazing job in pointing to Rush Limbaugh as the leader of the Republican Party. God knows it certainly isn't Michael Steele or Sarah Palin or John McCain. Rush Limbaugh is the heart and soul. Rush Limbaugh saying, I don't care if Specter goes. We don't want him anyway. The idea that the Republican Party is a hard right party full of rich, southern, white, Christian men. I don't know how Christian Rush Limbaugh is, but I'm sure he proclaims his particular religiosity. And a particular brand of intolerant Christianity. To separate them from the many very nice, rich, white, male Christians who are not intolerant. That's a very small sector of our society. There's a reason why the Republican Party is getting smaller and smaller. 35% of Americans called themselves Republicans in 2003. Now, today, 6 years later, 21% call themselves Republicans. That is amazing. They have lost more than a third, almost a half, of their entire membership. Now, many of them have become independents, and that's fine. They don't want to be Democrats. They want to be independents who are supportive of the Democratic Congress's agenda and President Obama's agenda. That's fine. But I think the defection of Arlen Specter points to a larger motivation here, a larger trend across the country. That doesn't mean that Arlen Specter did so for any but the most crass political reasons. I think everyone knows. One of the things Republicans are right about is that Specter changed because he was afraid he was going to lose in the primary. That's true. But even if it's true, so what? We will have a chance to judge Arlen Specter over the next 2 years. Arlen Specter voted about 62% of the time with the Republican Party. The Republicans thought that was all too low. If we can move him from 62% Republican to 62% Democrat, that's pretty good. That's 24%, if I've done my math correctly. That's one quarter of all issues. We get another vote. Will he move? Senator Specter has said that he will stay exactly the same, that he will not change his ideology. He will vote the same way. And if Senator Specter is telling the truth, then his transfer to the Democratic Party means nothing. This is not like Jim Jeffords' very important switch in 2001. When he was the 51st vote, he took control from the Republicans in the Senate, who were 50-50 with Dick Cheney breaking the tie, and gave that control to the Democrats. The 50th vote is far more important than the 60th, because it's not like there's one vote that you break a filibuster over. Each and every issue, the Republicans have filibustered. They have made the filibuster into an everyday policy, which it never was. I mean, filibusters were supposed to be reserved for extraordinary things, and now it has become a regular thing. I'm sure later on we'll talk about the choice to use budget reconciliation, which is a fancy way of saying we're only going to go for majority vote for some important programs like health care, something I very much support. So the point is that if Arlen Specter doesn't change his vote, and he said, for example, he won't change his vote on the Employee Free Choice Act, the act that would give people an easier chance to join unions, then his change means nothing. In fact, he may even run some Democratic committees that would be run by more liberal Democrats. But I don't believe Specter. I hope he's not telling the truth. Because, as Congressman Carnahan pointed out, he, instead of looking out for enemies on his right, is going to have to start looking to his left. He will not have a Republican challenger in the primary. He may have a Democratic challenger. Oh, I know President Obama and Governor Ed Rendell and fellow Senator Bob Casey have all said they're going to support Auden Spector. But what if he continues to be a 60% Republican voter? Then I think that people will do to him what they did in Connecticut to Joe Lieberman. Indeed, Auden Spector is to the right of Senator Lieberman, who generally voted with the Republicans only on foreign policy issues, but was pretty reliable as a domestic Democrat. This way, the pressure will be on his left side, not his right side. And already, Harry Reid, the majority leader, is looking at reworking the Employee Free Choice Act to see if he can find a way to make it acceptable to Auden Spector. After all, Spector once endorsed the act back in 2007 and largely changed his mind because of, well, the challenge from his right. That doesn't mean Auden Spector's principled, far from it. But it does mean he can be bought, not bought in a crass way through bribes, but perhaps in a saving face kind of way, change something in the bill that's not too big, give it to Spector, and we might be able to pull his vote with us. After all, that's largely what happened on the stimulus package, right? How did they get the three Republicans involved? They changed about $70 billion of the $700 billion, about 10%. And while I wish they didn't have to do it, I fully understand pragmatism in governing, and you've got to do that sometime. The other thing is that Senator Spector's been very good on, and we can criticize him for a lot of things on the Judiciary Committee, but the one thing he's been pretty good on is health care. Senator Spector, perhaps because he has suffered from cancer, is one of the few Republicans to understand the importance of having government involved in health care, both at the level of the National Institute of Health, the NIH, which has done a tremendous job. Talk about your government dollars well spent. A tremendous job in helping medical research, both for Americans and, frankly, around the globe. You know, pharmaceutical companies don't do that much research. Today, they spend more money on advertising than they do on research, and mostly for drugs that are very similar to other drugs and do things that, let's face it, you didn't even know you needed a cure for until you saw the commercial. Things like restless leg syndrome or being sad or depressed a lot of the time. I'm not saying that people can't use drugs for those things. What I am saying is that on the really important basic science, cures for cancer, cures for AIDS, ways to prevent heart attacks, the kinds of things that can save millions of lives, you don't see a lot of money being spent on these things by pharmaceutical companies. There is a role for the government, and that's one way, one particular way, I expect Auden Spector to be fully on the Democratic side. We'll also see how he is with universal health care. I think the rule with Spector should be, let's watch. Let's watch. Let's critique. Let's say that we don't plan to challenge you so far, but we want to see how you vote. Let's put pressure, subtle and not so subtle, on his left flank. And while I don't ever expect him to be a 90% Democrat, if we could be a 62% Democrat, I think we have to recognize that that is something. Al Franken will eventually sit in the Senate. It's just a matter of time. At this point, the Republicans are simply trying to delay what they know is a fait accompli. They know he's been elected. And it'll be interesting to see once the Minnesota Supreme Court rules that Franken has a right to take his seat, whether or not they bring the entirely frivolous case to federal court. And whether or not the governor of Minnesota, a person who's very likely to run for president soon, Tim Pawlenty, he was mentioned as a vice presidential choice for John McCain, and frankly, would have been far better for the Republicans than Sarah Palin. It'll be interesting to see if the governor breaks the law and withholds the election certificate for Al Franken. That's all around the corner. But at the end of the day, I think that President Obama has hit the ground running. He's shown he can do many, many different things at once and on a number of different issues. As Congressman Carnahan said, there are those that are complaining he's doing too much. But having been left in the tremendous hole of the Bush administration, economic hole, foreign policy hole, and having been left with some of the simmering problems of energy and health care and education that have infected the United States for generations, how can he not try to do it all? we'll see how it all turns out. I happen to believe the economy will turn around by the end of 2009, at the latest by the beginning of 2010. But it is likely, as Constance Carnahan mentioned, to get worse before it gets better, particularly in things like unemployment. We have a lot to get over from the problems of the Bush administration. And he's going to have political problems, too. It is very, very difficult politically to explain why we have to give money to financial institutions who brought us this mess to begin with. And yet I, for one, and this is not a very very common thing for a talk show host to say, I, for one, think we have to. I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. And I don't want to reward the individuals. I think all of them should be fired. But the institutions, you got to have credit. You have to have a country run from credit. Now, maybe there are other ways to do it. Maybe the government can nationalize some of the banks, can shut a bunch of them down, can take over AIG or the auto companies and so forth. But the way the law is structured now, it's very hard to do that. There are companies that are too big to fail. And one of the ways I think that President Obama will most be judged by history years into the future is how he reforms financial regulation. Not how he bails out the specific companies right now, the thing that's getting so much criticism, but how he changes the very structure of regulating financial institutions, how he changes the SEC, how he regulates large insurance companies, how he makes sure that CEOs are responsive to their shareholders. Because if CEOs actually did what was in the best interest of their companies, we wouldn't be in this mess. We have a corporate system, as I've said all too often in the past, and I think it's very, very little attention in the mainstream press. We have a corporate system whereby the people who run corporations are basically putting fistfuls of money in their pockets, and they don't give a damn as to what happens to the corporation. Even the Alan Greenspan, the former Federal Reserve chairman, announced he was astonished, that CEOs will look out for their personal interests instead of the interests of their companies. Well, if a very intelligent man like Alan Greenspan could be shocked by this, then maybe it's time for everyone to wake up. We need to have shareholders controlling corporations. And one of the things that I haven't seen on the Obama agenda, but I really hope we can all put there, is proposals not to have the government nationalize companies, not to be socialist, but simply to have the shareholders take care of companies, to stop having corporate elections where there's only one director for every seat on the ballot, to give shareholders a say in executive compensation. You know, already there are banks and financial institutions that are trying to get out of the TARP program, the Troubled Asset Recovery Program, not because it won't help their companies, it will help their companies, but because they won't get the millions of dollars in bonuses that they don't get when they participate in government programs. It's this culture of greed that needs to change. And I think one way to see whether the Obama administration has been successful in its first 100 days is whether by the end of this year he has changed the culture on Wall Street, doing so either through regulation, through legislation, or through simply talking down these companies, convinced these titans of Wall Street that it's just not going to be back to the same old business anymore. We want transparency. We're going to watch what you do. We know how much danger you pose to the economy, and we're going to treat you much as we would, oh, I don't know, a biological weapon, with lots of care, knowing its destructive power. So, these are the first 100 days of the Obama administration. If you want to comment on anything I've said, I hope you'll do so. Go to my website. Let me know what you think at RadioInsideScoop.com. I don't see a lot of commentary sometimes, and I like to hear from you. I want to hear your thoughts, either on the Obama administration or anything that I've said. Tomorrow, I've got a very interesting guest. I have a right-wing preacher coming on my show, the kind that that Bob Kincaid mocks every Wednesday, and he's going to argue against the hate crimes bill. What he doesn't realize is that I helped to draft that bill. So don't miss the fireworks tomorrow here on The Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine.